All right, we'll call our next case. It's Genzer v. James River Insurance Company, number 18-6105. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel for the appellee. I'm Rex Travis. I represent Bonnie Genzer. I would like to divide
your counsel for appellant, correct?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Your counsel for appellant?
I'm for the appellant.
Okay.
Your Honor. Yes. I would like to split my time 10 and 5, if I may.
Okay. We'll have to see how it goes, but
okay.
Keep an eye on the clock.
Thank you, Your Honor. We have essentially two issues in this case. One is whether the district court correctly decided that the policy provision, which says that this Uber driver's coverage remained in effect only until she dropped off her passenger 140 miles from where her home base was, where she operated, or whether because of the inclusion of the language, including but not limited to the dropping off of a passenger, that creates an ambiguity in the policy. That's the first issue. Secondly, the question is whether the court here should have followed the mend the hold doctrine, which says that when an insurance company selects a ground or grounds for denying coverage, that insurance company cannot thereafter, in the defense of a lawsuit, assert a defense other than the ground that they chose to assert. Factually, the case is a reasonably simple one. This Uber driver picked up a passenger at Will Rogers World Airport in Oklahoma City and was asked to drive that passenger 140 or so miles to Woodward, a smaller town in northwest Oklahoma. She did that. She dropped off the passenger on her way back, still logged in to the Uber app, which would give her assignments if there were people in that remote rural area asking for an Uber. There weren't. She would get the call. She was driving south and east toward Oklahoma City from Woodward and met an oil field truck carrying a load of pipe. For some reason, I don't think anybody knows why, a piece of steel came off the pipe that was loaded on the truck, flew through the air, penetrated her windshield, and ended up embedded in her head. It's very seriously injured. It's doubtful that the truck driver ever knew that happened. He's meeting a vehicle going the opposite direction. That piece of steel comes off. There's no reason he would know that. In any event, nobody has been able to identify the driver of the truck or the company that owns the truck. And by the agreement of all the parties, that meant that this became an uninsured motor vehicle for whose liability an uninsured motorist carrier, if the coverage applies, would be liable. This is a suit on the uninsured motorist policy to recover from James River Insurance Company, which wrote the coverage for Uber, or a company that's franchised by Uber, Razor, I think it's called. And the suit was filed in state court, removed federal court. And the district court, the Western District, granted summary judgment in favor of the insurance company, raising the legal issues we talked about. Taking up first the mend the hold argument, which I think is going to be the one that troubles us the most, the Oklahoma Supreme Court in 1906 adopted the mend the hold doctrine based on a wrestling term for when you're wrestling somebody and you let go of your hold to grab them another way and thus get a better grip on them, or, quote, mend your hold. And the Oklahoma Supreme Court, relying on and quoting a much earlier United States Supreme Court called it the mend the whole doctrine and adopted the mend the whole doctrine, approved it.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? When you refer to the mend the whole doctrine and the fact that the Oklahoma Supreme Court adopted the doctrine, I guess that kind of leaves open the question, what is the doctrine and what are the parameters? And can you help me understand, at least in your view, what the mend the whole doctrine covers and why it would apply here?
Right. Judge, the mend the whole doctrine is perhaps most cogently explained on page 10 of the appellant's brief in a quote from Appleman's, the lead encyclopedia on insurance law. And it says, as applied to insurance law, that an insurance company may not deny a claim on a particular ground or grounds, and thereafter, when they get in litigation, raise another and different ground. That's essentially the mend the whole doctrine. It applies in other contract situations as well, but it's now, in modern terms, as the Harbor Insurance Company case, also cited on page 11 or 12 of our brief, suggests it is now seen most commonly in the context of insurance companies denying coverage.
Well, could I get you then just to anticipate what your opposing counsel, I assume, will argue, is that in this case, didn't the insurance company leave its options somewhat open? Like, we're denying this on this ground, but there may be other things that arise. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm wondering if you could just focus on that a bit.
And I apologize, Judge Ide. My hearing aids are not technologically capable of fitting into the loop thing that I understand we're offered, and I appreciate that. And by the next time I'm here, I suspect I will have different hearing aids, but I could not hear you.
Yeah. Let me just, I assume your opposing counsel will stand up and say, or as they've argued in the briefs, that it wasn't so clear in this instance that the insurance company was denying only on one ground, that they kept their option open to look at this case.
Here's what they're saying in their briefs, both in the district court and here. They are saying, well, in addition to the ground that we cited and asserted in the letter denying the claim, we were aware that we possibly had this other ground that we upon which we could have relied in the denial letter, but didn't. And they illustrate that by producing some emails in which their claim people discussed the other ground. That is, that just based on the policy provision that we've talked about, whether it is or is not ambiguous, that if it is unambiguous, would possibly deny coverage, would deny coverage, no question. But the fact is, they didn't assert that in the denial letter. They wrote emails indicating that they are aware of that. And the quotation from Appleman that we talked about a moment ago on page 10 speaks to that. And basically where that works out is, if the insurance company knew of the other defense that they later assert in the lawsuit but chose not to assert it, then the courts say the insurance company has waived its right to assert that defense. If they didn't know about the defense or they simply forgot about it, then the term, instead of being a waiver, which is a knowing forfeiture of a known right, then we say they are estopped to assert it. And that's the difference, and the outcome is precisely the same. Whether they waived it or they're estopped to assert it, the fact is they cannot raise the ground that they did not put in the denial letter. And the result
is
precisely the same. Yes,
I'm sorry. Does it matter that the defense is not inconsistent? In other words, it's just an additional defense.
I'm sorry, does it matter that it's an additional ground?
Yeah, as opposed to being an inconsistent one. You know, I understand why you would say they took position one, and now they're taking position two, which is inconsistent with position one. But what if it's just additional to it? How are you prejudiced, and does that matter?
None of these men, the whole cases, the insurance cases, if Your Honor, please, take the position that they have to be inconsistent. They simply have to be different. That's it. None of them talk about inconsistent. You know,
could I ask you about the cases on mend the hold? You've talked about this. I'll speak up.
Okay.
You've talked about this Haberman case.
Yes, sir.
Tell me, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that to be a bad faith claim, bad faith insurance claim. This is not a bad faith insurance claim. This is a breach of contract claim. And so what I'm interested in is whether you've got a case that applies mend the hold to a breach of contract claim where the change in position happened before the after the litigation began, as opposed to during the litigation.
They almost all do.
All do what?
Judge Matheson, they almost all conflate or come together as between a breach of contract and a bad faith claim.
Yeah, what's your best case that's a breach of contract claim? Is it still?
Harbor, the lead case in the nation on mend the hold doctrine is the Harbor case, which we cite again on page 11 or 12. And I can't remember, not an 11th, it's like a 6th or 7th.
Okay. Let me ask you a slightly different question. Do you have an Oklahoma case where mend the hold has applied other than changing position after litigation has begun?
No, we do not, Your Honor. We do not. But I was impressed with the fact that, you know, my opposing counsel in this case is a very well-known and well-thought-of Oklahoma law firm. They're really, really highly skilled lawyers. Don't you think if there were cases out there that suggested that even other jurisdictions reject the mend-the-hold doctrine, they would have found those and put them in their briefs, and they don't do that.
Well, maybe we'll hear something about that in a few minutes. I just noticed you've got 3 minutes. Did you want to take some time on the first issue, your contract interpretation issue?
I will, Your Honor, and if you'd like, I'll do that now.
Well, we only have... Go ahead.
Okay. It's relatively simple. You've got a phrase in there, including but not limited to. Now, the court reads that as if it read including dropping off or exclusively dropping off the passenger. What in the world does that including but not limited to? Well, to figure that out, you have to speculate about what it means, and that's what the district court does in their opinion. They say, well, gee, maybe it meant if you make intermediate stops dropping off passengers, then that's what the including but not limited to means. Well, that doesn't make sense because if you're dropping off intermediate stops, passengers, that is dropping off passengers. So it just doesn't make any sense. So the court selects the meaning that ends up with there being no coverage as opposed to the clear rule in Oklahoma and every other state that I don't know anything about, which is if that language, including but not limited to, means it means one thing interpreted one way and another thing another, that's ambiguous.
Well, let me just ask you, the language that precedes including but not limited to, I'm just going off the policy sentence. Traveling to the final destination of the requested transportation services. Well, here the final destination was Woodward, wasn't it? And the requested transportation service was to Woodward. It wasn't the return trip.
Judge, I don't think anybody contemplated that Uber hiring was going to send this Uber driver to Woodward and leave her there forever.
Well, no, I think she was going to drive home at some
she's
point. But the question is whether she's a covered auto during that return trip, right?
Right, and what do you think they charged by way of miles for which they charged that person who went from Oklahoma City to Woodward 140 miles? Do you think they charged them 140 miles or they charged them 280 miles?
What did they charge?
I don't know. They obviously would have to charge them for the whole trip, 280 miles. That's what the Uber driver had to drive in order to make that work, seems to me. And that is our argument. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, good morning. Your honors, my name is Jason Glass, and I represent the appellee in this matter, James River Insurance Company. There are three issues before the court today. One is regarding whether the disputed policy provision is ambiguous. The second is whether the mend the hold doctrine is somehow applicable to this matter. And the third is whether or not this court should certify the mend the hold issue to the Oklahoma Supreme Court.
Could we just pick up on this last point?
Yes.
While it's still fresh. Why couldn't Ms. Genzer's return drive to Oklahoma City from Woodward be considered part of the requested service, whether the clock's running or not on payment, because meeting the passenger's requested destination necessarily requires the driver to go back to Oklahoma City. It's just inherent in the nature of the trip. So why shouldn't the policy be read to cover that?
Well, just because that's not what the policy provides. The policy states that...
Well, I'm asking if you could read requested service. I mean, when somebody asks you to drive 140 miles outside of Oklahoma City, inherent to that is you're requesting that person to go out of their way and then go back. So why couldn't requested service be read in that manner?
But it's a requested service to travel to the final destination of the passenger, as requested by the passenger.
Well, there's an or in between those, just following the language Judge Matheson's reading.
Correct. The or refers to an Uber driver or an occupant of the vehicle has UM coverage if they have logged and accepted a fare and they are en route to pick up that passenger, or if they are in the process of transporting that passenger to the final destination. Those are the two circumstances under which the Uber driver would have UM coverage.
So whenever the driver doesn't have a passenger in the car, the driver has to rely on insurance other than your client?
With the exception of if they have logged and accepted a fare and are en route to pick up that passenger, then they would have UM coverage. Otherwise, yes, they would have to rely upon their own personal insurance.
Do you sell coverage that would include everything?
I don't. This policy only insures Uber specifically. I don't know if there are other products available in that respect. With respect to that provision, again, it is our position that it is clear, unambiguous, and only subject to one reasonable interpretation given the language. Again, it is the passenger that is requesting the transportation to the final destination, and there is coverage that they are en route to pick up that passenger, or if they are traveling to the final destination of the requested transportation services, including but not limited to the dropping off of passengers.
Well, I'm still not entirely sure you've answered Judge Matheson, because you say requested that, but the language says requested transportation services. Why can't you read it just as he said? That hadn't dawned on me, but...
Well, the request is coming from the passenger who has they've gotten onto their app on their phone, and they have requested transportation services to a particular destination. And in this case, she has requested transportation from the Oklahoma City Airport to some location in Woodward. That is the requested transportation service. With respect to the,
well, counsel, I'm not. This will be my last run at this. But what if the passenger said, "I want to go to New York," and the Uber driver says, "Well, I don't usually go to New York, but I'll take you to New York." It seems to me that why couldn't the service include, I just don't see why the service couldn't possibly include the return trip.
It's the requested service of the passenger to go to a particular destination. There's no contemplation that there'd be a return to any particular location.
What, that the driver's just going to stay in New York?
That's up to the driver. I mean, the driver
really?
Has... Really?
I mean, as a practical reality, the driver's going to go home. They have a home base, right?
Sure.
So isn't that really what the passenger is asking the driver to do, is to do a round trip?
I don't think so. I mean, typically, you know, the Uber driver, once they complete a fare, they would be looking for another fare, and they may go to some additional destination before at some point, I assume, they would go home. That's completely up to the driver. The driver has the ability to accept or not accept a particular fare.
Yeah, counsel, can I just ask then, at the time of the request, the Uber driver does not have to accept the request, right? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes.
The passenger wants to go to New York, and the Uber driver says, I actually don't want to go to New York because that puts me many hundreds of miles away from my home. So then the Uber driver says, no, I don't want to take that passenger. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, that's correct. The Uber driver has the application on their phone in the vehicle that they're driving, and they are alerted when there are passengers who would like to go to particular destinations. And they can choose to accept a particular fare or not. There's no requirement that they do so. And in this case, the Uber driver chose to accept the requested transportation services from Oklahoma City Airport to Woodward.
So let's say 140 miles, let's call it 2 hours. If the Uber driver had done the two-hour first leg of that journey and then just pulled over and drunk coffee until receiving a request for more Uber services 2 hours from then and said, okay, I can get that for you, I'll be there in 2.5 hours, then you would say there's insurance coverage on the way back.
If the Uber driver has logged and accepted a fare, yes, and is en route to pick up that fare, yes, there would be UM coverage.
And so it all comes down to whether or not the Uber driver pulls over and waits for someone who needs a ride in 2 hours. That's what policy is about?
That's how it's written. You know, it's defined by the requested transportation services to a particular destination. And the Uber driver has the option to choose or reject that particular request.
So it's easy to get the coverage. You just have to pull over and drink coffee long enough.
No, you just have to be able to log and accept another fare. Okay. And then be en route to pick up that passenger or be transporting that passenger to their final destination. With respect to the mend the whole doctrine argument by the plaintiff, James River has never changed its position in this case. It has always been James River's position that there is no UM coverage because plaintiff was not operating or occupying a covered auto. Based upon James River's information when the claim was first submitted, plaintiff had logged off of the application voluntarily. Because of that, there would be no UM coverage after she had dropped off her passenger at the requested destination. During the course of the claim, the plaintiff's lawyer advised that they believed their client was logged into the application attempting to find another fare. And James River advised a plaintiff's counsel, not this counsel, but counsel before, that regardless of the offline status or if she was logged into the app and searching for a fare, there was still not coverage under either scenario under the policy.
Well, if you had changed your position, would the mend the hold policy apply or doctrine apply?
It would not. The U.S. Supreme Court case from 1877 and the Oklahoma Territorial case from 1906 both involve situations in which litigants change positions during trial or between trial and appeal. That is certainly not the case that we have here. And there's no case that's been cited in Oklahoma since 1906 regarding the mend the hold doctrine. And the other cases relied upon by plaintiff's counsel deal with the claim of bad faith, not whether or not there has been a breach of the insurance contract. And specifically Buzzard, plaintiff's counsel relies extensively on Buzzard versus Farmers. And again, that case involved a claim of bad faith. But what's significant about that case is that the insurance company, prior to the lawsuit being filed, had denied the claim based on an argument that the insured had not exhausted available liability limits. After lawsuit was filed, the insurance company asserted an additional defense of contributory negligence. The case was tried, evidence was heard regarding the claim of contributory negligence, and the jury found the plaintiff to be 27% at fault for the accident. The case was appealed, and then the issues regarding the insurance company's change in position with respect to the bad faith claim were addressed. The Oklahoma Supreme Court upheld the decision with respect to the breach of contract claim. The change in position had no effect on whether or not there had been a breach. The insurance company was still permitted to present evidence regarding the contributory negligence claim. So the change in all of those cases regard the insurance company's duty of good faith and fair dealing, not whether or not there's been a breach of the insurance contract.
Well, counsel, how would you define the parameters of the mend the hold doctrine under Oklahoma law?
Yeah, if the mend the hold doctrine applies in Oklahoma, it applies in a situation in which a litigant takes one position for an advantage during trial.
And so it has to be during litigation?
Correct.
Or at least that's what the cases from Oklahoma have dealt with so far.
That is
we would have to be expanding the doctrine?
Yes, it would be a radical expansion of the doctrine. And specifically in this case, James River Insurance Company has always taken the position that the claim was not owed because she was not operating a covered auto.
Well, right. So let me just understand your position that you don't think mend the hold applies at all.
I don't.
Because you did not change your position. But if mend the hold did apply, it doesn't apply under Oklahoma law because Oklahoma law has only recognized the doctrine in the context of a change during litigation.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to any certification to the Oklahoma Supreme Court, I would just offer that I don't think that's appropriate in this case, you know, for the reasons discussed regarding the mend the hold doctrine so far, but also with respect to the issue that plaintiff never submitted a request to have the case certified to the Oklahoma Supreme Court until after an adverse ruling had been entered. And there's authority from this court, which gives the court discretion, you know, as to whether or not to grant certification under those scenarios. Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We appreciate the arguments of counsel. Case will be submitted and counsel are excused.